Tell me, my nondescript first officer, what's your dream when we get to the United States?
I think I very much would like to become a Republican. Will they allow me to become a Republican?
Well, this is a Tom Clancy novel, so yes, you'll be able to become a Republican, yes.
A little revolution now and then is a healthy thing, don't you think?
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Late Seating. I'm Jason Harding.
And I'm Steve Shives.
On this show, we take a classic movie and see if it lives up to its reputation, whether that reputation is good or bad. And this time around, the movie we're doing is The Hunt for Red October.
Yeah!
Hooray for us! The thing that totally didn't happen. It didn't happen, guys.
It's not based on a true story.
It's not based on a true story.
Based on a novel that some dude from Baltimore wrote, and then Ronald Reagan read it, and he became a millionaire.
Yeah. That's right. Ronald Reagan read it and said, I bet that really happened. Or maybe
this
it
is
didn't.
A good book, everybody.
I don't know the difference between fiction and reality anymore.
Why don't we have one of those subs? I could go for a sub.
Mommy, the jelly beans have jumped down my throat again. I hate jelly beans, Mommy.
You know, that was Ron's favorite scene in the movie when the guy was eating jelly beans while he's talking to the Russian ambassador.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I got to get me some of those jelly beans.
Yeah, and Ron Reagan whipped his dick out as soon as he saw him. Oh, something I like. Oh, Mommy. Anyway.
The Hunt for Red October.
The Hunt for Red October. Hey, Steve, do you have any trivia for this? Super spy. Is it a thriller? It's a thriller.
I wouldn't say it's a spy movie, but yeah.
This super thriller from the late. Wait, is 90?
The early 1990. Yeah, actually, it's funny. We were just talking about Ronald Reagan reading the book and thinking it was real. I don't know if that actually happened, but I do know that. So one of the important like plot details in the story is that this Russian sub has this thing called the Caterpillar Drive, which
That's
allows
right.
it to move silently through the deep.
Doesn't that sound mysterious? Caterpillar Drive.
The Caterpillar Drive. And that's something that was invented for the story. There is no such thing as a Caterpillar Drive, but apparently after reading the book, several members of Congress got in touch with the CIA, and they wanted to know how come the Russians had developed the Caterpillar Drive before we did.
That's because we're run by idiots. We've always been run by idiots. They're fucking idiots.
This has been the latest installment in our series. Your member of Congress is a dipshit.
We're being led by morons.
We're doomed, and we always have been. Something else, as part of their preparation to make the movie, several of the main cast members were allowed
to keep getting calls like the CIA has a special desk for when a member of Congress calls in. Okay, yeah. I want to know if I say Beetlejuice, and then I say it one more time, is this guy going to show up? And can we use him for covert operations to kill people? We just send a note to somebody that says, you know, his name three times and he just shows up and kills him. Can we do that? Thanks. Give me a call later. Bye. Click.
Where's Gotham City and how can we find Batman?
Boop. Hi, this is Senator Buttfuck, and I want to know when are we going to get them elephants that can fly? I just watched a whole movie about an elephant that can fly. Imagine that. Is there a way we can get them flying elephants to drop bombs? I bet they're undetectable by radar. Give them a call back. Bye. Boop.
Boop. How did Billy Crystal get Meg Ryan to fall in love with him? I don't think she would even give a man like that the time of day. Short little Jew like that. She's a gorgeous woman.
I want this Forrest Gump guy found. He's a menace and he causes way too much destruction. I want him found and brought. Bring him in. All right, give me a call back. Bye. Boop. We could do a whole series. We could do a whole series of idiot senators and congresspeople calling the CIA, trying to get them to stop whatever movie they happen to watch over the weekend.
Did them kids in the Monster Squad ever send that Frankenstein back to where he came from?
And why did we send military personnel after him? I don't understand.
So, yeah. We're
anyway.
We're in a lot of trouble.
Yes, we are. We're in a lot of goddamn trouble.
As part of their preparation to make the movie, several of the main cast members were allowed to take rides on actual U.S. Navy submarines.
Wee!
And Sean Connery and Scott Glenn were even permitted to give orders to the crews of the subs they rode on. Although, as they did so, of course, the actual commanders were standing right next to them. So it's kind of like, you know, when you let your you're going for a drive and you have like your little kid and you're like, you want to drive for a while, and like they just kind of steer from the passenger
seat.
Yeah, you
know? That's Sean like Connery that. Giggling while
yeah. The wheel. Fire torpedoes. just kidding.
Launch everything against the United States. What?
Let's start a war.
World War III.
But yeah, and Scott Glenn even based his performance as his character on the captain of the sub that he rode on. Wow. So he stole it. He just stole it from the real guy.
He's so great.
I know he's the best.
He's so quiet when he gives his orders.
Yeah. Yeah. So
whispering against orders to his guy's like a lover.
Right, full rudder.
Ignore my hands.
Look straight ahead. Just do what I tell you. Unless he's yelling at John Glenn, then he's not.
So why there are no women on those boats? Probably they are now, but I mean,
back then there aren't any women in this whole fucking thing except for like
no, there isn't. There's a
blink and you'll miss.
A fleeting glimpse of Dr. Crusher at the
yeah,
very
Dr.
beginning.
Crusher shows up and has one line in one scene, and then there's no woman for the whole fucking thing.
Not even serving goddamn coffee.
No. So the scale model of the Red October that they used to create the underwater exteriors was never actually filmed in water.
Nope.
Instead, they created like a small scale set for the underwater scenes, and the sub model was suspended on wires so they could move it however they needed to move it for the shot. Mm-hmm. And they created the underwater effect with a combination of dry ice mist and post-production effects. And yep. I was really surprised when I read that, because I think those underwater shots of the subs flying around under the ocean look really good. Look really convincing.
They look really good, but you know that yeah. they're special effects.
Oh yeah, you know that it's not like a real sub. But
if it was like real subs at depth, we wouldn't see anything.
No, there's no light. They're like at the bottom of the fucking ocean. Like they're way down there for a lot of that stuff. Like, how can we see this? Where's this light coming from?
Especially like whenever they launch countermeasures, they're the brightest thing in the ocean at that time.
Yeah. Despite concerns about protecting classified information related to American subs, the U.S. military fully cooperated with the production of the film, hoping that it would drive enlistment in the Navy the same way Top Gun had done for the Air Force a few
years
ago.
What in the world? Hey, kids, here's how you can die. Here's how you can die in the Navy. Crushed to death instantaneously in a yeah. submarine.
It doesn't make being on a sub look all that much fun, does it?
No, it's cramped and it's small. And even the yeah. Red October, even at its full size, isn't humongous. It's not a gigantic sub.
No, it's big for a sub, but it's not like it's still cramped quarters. That's kind of the way it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, yeah. Vice Admiral James Greer might say big son of a bitch, but big as far as a submarine goes.
Biggest, yeah, exactly. Not big.
Actually, technically, I think they fucked around with scale, because the October, they say it in the movie that it's about as big as a goddamn aircraft carrier.
Yeah.
That's pretty goddamn big.
I don't think it's that big, because aircraft carriers are humongous.
When we see it at the surface, maybe most of it is underwater when they show it.
Maybe.
Who knows? Yeah. Anyway.
Who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit? It's a fake made-up goddamn movie.
Yeah,
who cares?
It's a fake sub and a fake movie.
That's right.
Last bit of trivia about the subject that I'm sure everybody wants to know about, Sean Connery's toupee.
Oh, it's an excellent.
It is.
Kiss.
Oh, it looks just
perfect
terrific.
Toupee for him.
Sean Connery's toupee reportedly cost $20,000.
What the fuck?
However, this is disputed. The director of the
Did
film.
Did they get the hair to make it out of from a king?
Here's the story. I don't know what the truth is, but here's the story that I found. John McTiernan disputes this. He says what happened was, when Sean Connery first reported to the set, he had a hairpiece that he wanted to wear in the movie, but the hairpiece had a ponytail.
Yeah,
and every Everybody else was like, that's wrong. You can't wear a ponytail as this Russian sub-captain. But Connery was insistent, and he even went like to the producers of the movie. Like, he went over the director's head. It was like, I must be allowed to wear this ponytail. So they shot for 2 days with Connery's character wearing this ponytail hairpiece. And eventually everybody said, this isn't going to work. Like, we can't do this. This looks ridiculous.
Why the fuck did he want a ponytail on a military man?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But anyway, so eventually, after 2 days of shooting, they convinced Connery, this isn't going to work. We have to do something else. So Connery said, all right, fine. So they switched to the hairpiece that he has in the actual movie, and they reshot the scenes that they had shot with him wearing the ponytail. John McTiernan claims that the $20,000 price tag attached to the hairpiece includes the cost of those reshoots.
Oh, I'm having and, to reset. No,
yeah. And he also says, and I don't know if this, I don't think this is true, but he also says, probably as a joke, that the actual hairpiece that Sean Connery is wearing in the film costs about $10.
Okay.
So I think that's probably an exaggeration, because it is a really good looking hairpiece, I think.
But, it's not bad. It makes it look like he has hair, which is what the job is.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, can I do my part now?
Do it.
Directed by John McTiernan. And you know him, he directed Predator. And then he went to jail for the remake of Rollerball. Way to go, John, you fucking idiots. You could have made any movie at all, but you said, you know what? I'm going to put my entire career and my freedom on fucking around with Rollerball.
And my freedom.
He was the one that the wiretapping case where he was, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Screenplay by Larry Ferguson, and he wrote on Highlander and Alien 3. Also Donald E. Stewart, and he wrote on Missing and Patriot Games. That sounds, remember? No? Okay. Fine. Based on The Hunt for Red October by Tom Clancy, and he got a whole bunch of books about ridiculous fucking shit, mostly about nukes, and the same guy somehow in all of them.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Mm-hmm.
Jack Ryan.
And between bouts of staring at a wall, drooling, Ronald Reagan loved this book. He was in bad shape the last year of his presidency.
But seriously, that is what
funnily enough,
people...
both the candidates for president are older than he was then.
That's true. Isn't it fun? Isn't it an interesting time to be alive?
Our country is fucked.
But apparently the thing, because Tom Clancy, the Hunt for Red October was his first novel. He was not a professional writer.
No,
I think
he
worked as like a clerk somewhere or something.
Yeah.
And he got this book published, and he was from Baltimore, and I guess somehow Ronald Reagan got a copy of the book and was photographed carrying the book as he was on his way somewhere as president. And a bunch of the fucking, you know, right wingers were like, it's Ronald Reagan's reading a book. And they all went out and and got it too. And that's what made it a bestseller.
Remember, Steve, back then we could kind of respect Republicans on some of their stances.
That's true, but even then they sure loved Ronald Reagan.
Oh, well, they loved him. They love Reagan.
President Reagan's reading a book. Let's all read it. And then Tom Clancy ended up writing like 50 more books.
Yeah, they made lots of money. Produced by Mace Newfield, who also did movies like The Omen and our personal favorite, Gods and Generals.
Oh God.
Mace
the movie
Newfield.
I almost walked out of.
You should have. You should have walked out.
I didn't. It turns out I didn't miss anything in the second half. I should have walked out.
Starring Sean Connery as Captain Marco Ramius. You know who Sean Connery is. I don't need to tell you who he is. Do I? I hope not. Alec Baldwin as Jack Ryan. And that might make you, because his face changed a lot through alcoholism and eating.
He's gone through some changes.
Holy shit. But you know Alec Baldwin, he's been in a ton of movies, and he's now in trouble for shooting someone in the face.
Oops.
Oh no, accidents happen. Joss Ackland as Andrei Lysenko, and you know him as the bad guy from Lethal Weapon 2 and a whole bunch of other parts. You know, nothing major, nothing, you know. Peter Firth as Ivan Putin, and you recognize him from Amistad. Scott Glenn.
Yeah.
As Steve's favorite.
Scott Glenn, who doesn't look any worse today than he ever did, he's always looked like a 65-year-old cowboy
his
entire life.
as Commander Bart Mancuso, and you know him from The Right Stuff. And a Stick from frickin'. He must have been so happy when you found out he was Stick.
Oh, man. Yeah. In Daredevil. Yeah.
On Daredevil.
He was like, great. Oh, he was great. Oh, yeah. He's like, oh, he's
such
he's
a fucking got, asshole.
He's just got to be Scott Glenn. And he's great.
James Earl Jones is Vice Admiral James Greer. Yeah. You know him. Do I? Jeffrey Jones, the fucking pederast, who's thankfully not in this movie long enough to ruin it, as Skip Tyler.
That's true. Oh, I hope he's not in this a lot. You
have to look at his fucking pederast face with the fake beard glued onto it. You can skip it all together. In fact, I did. I mean, I know what he says. My daddy built the bomb shelter, and that's a bad, bad submarine. That's all you need to know. That's it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Richard Jordan is Jeffrey Pelton. You know him from Logan's Run. Remember him from Logan's Run?
Yeah.
Remember when he said run, runner? That was great. Sam Neill is Vasily Borodin. I've never actually liked Sam Neill. I appreciate really? Him in a couple of... No, I mean, name a great Sam Neill movie. Other than... Hunt for the Wilder People, because that's a great movie, and he's so old and so great in that. I like him so much in that movie.
He's reliable. He's reliably good in anything mayonnaise. That I've seen him in.
That's it. I mean, his worst performance in his entire career is the Jurassic Park movies. Every single one of them, just really bad.
Well, he's just bland. Yeah. He's just, you know.
He was okay in The Piano because he was a kind of creepy guy. Yeah. I'm a creepy guy. And he's like doing creepy things. I mean, he's not bad across the board. It's just I haven't seen anything that really like impressed me except for Hunt for the Wilder People. Have you seen that movie?
I haven't seen it.
What the fuck is wrong with you? Watch that movie. God damn it.
I watched The New Roadhouse instead.
Yeah, you watch. This candy tastes good. Watch something. That will feed your goddamn soul.
This candy tastes good.
It tastes similar but different. Stellan Skarsgård. Before anyone knew about him or his children.
He's just a baby in this. Look how young he is. He's a
baby. As Viktor Tupolev. Fred Thompson as Rear Admiral Joshua Painter. And I only knew him as an actor before I found out that he was fucking around in Congress.
He was a senator, yeah.
Republican senator, yeah. Courtney B. Vance as Petty Officer Ronald Jones. And he did a lot of TV. He did Law and Order, didn't he? Yeah.
He was in Law and Order, and he was in the TV miniseries they did of the O.J. Simpson trial. He played Johnny Cochran.
Oh, I meant to put in the dude, the second in command on the ship underneath Fred Thompson. What's his face? Can't remember his name. Don't care.
Oh, Daniel Davis.
Daniel Davis. I met him when I was a student at ACT. He was doing a show.
He's good.
He played Moriarty on
Star Trek.
On Star Trek, and boy, he's gay. Anyway, so he went everywhere. What? He went everywhere with these little dogs. He's a very nice guy. He's a nice guy. He's a great guy. We'll take back that other part. Doesn't matter. That part doesn't matter. But he had a lot of dogs with him. He came to visit the studios, and you know, we got to meet him. Whatever. And Gates McFadden as blink as you'll miss her. Boy, yep. I bet you regret leaving that fucking show, don't you, Gates? You know her, Beverly Crusher.
Yeah.
This is when she left briefly because she said, I don't want to be in this. And she looked around desperately, and this is what she got. 2.5 seconds in this fucking movie, pretending to be British.
Long enough where you can, just long enough to say, is that Gates McFadden? And then she's gone.
You don't even get to see her. When he kisses her goodbye, she's inside the car. Could have been anybody.
She's a shadow in a car.
Goddamn Great Dane in there, and he's saying goodbye to. I think she says two stories and two glasses of water, and she leaves. And she's crying the whole way, going, I had a lead on a TV show.
She came back. She was fine. Left
for this. Yeah, she came back. She did. That's fine. Cinematography by John DeBont, and he did cinematography for Die Hard. Edited by Dennis Verkler, and he did Batman and Robin. John boy. Ryan also edited. He did movies like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I think he didn't do number one. I think he did number two, The Secret of the Ooze.
What a weird career track to go from The Hunt for Red October to Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Very close, very close. Yeah, very close to each other.
Yeah,
too.
Just within a couple years. Yeah.
Music by Basil Poledouris, and you know him. He did the music for Crocodile Dundee in Los Angeles. Holy shit, Hollywood is a fucking pit, isn't it? It's just a pit. You know what else he's done? I've mentioned it before. Conan
the Barbarian, right? Yeah.
And I think he did The Terminator. Isn't he the one that banging on pots or whatever? I don't know.
Jim, I've got your score for Terminator. Check this out.
He's the one that took what a robot's made of, and he just banged on metal for RoboCop.
RoboCop. What a robot's made of.
And he's what just a robot's made metal. Of. Bang on metal. Dun, dun, dun,
I've
dun,
got
dun,
it.
Dun. But you don't fucking forget it, do you?
No.
I'm done. Oh, production company Mace Newfield Productions, distributed by Paramount Pictures. Release date March 2nd, 1990. Uh-oh, March.
Oh.
They didn't know what to do with it.
Early in the year.
They're like, what do we do with this movie? Now, a lot of people, they had been wanting to adapt it since 1985, and the studios grabbed their penises, got scared, and said, we don't know. No, what's too complicated for American audiences? They want the baby that slips in the diarrhea, and there isn't a single scene of a baby slipping in diarrhea in this movie. It's too complicated, so we're not going to make it. But someone got over themselves. And they finally made it by 1990.
Yep.
Okay. It took too long, but whatever. Running time, 135 minutes. Budget, $30 million. Adjusted for inflation, $71.2 million. Box office, $200.5 million or $476 million. And then all of a sudden, all the studios that were terrified of doing something like that desperately grabbed up everything that Tom Clancy had ever written,
well
made up a whole bunch of movies set on goddamn submarines because they have no imagination left. There's never been anything.
Exactly.
They are bankrupt of ideas.
They like submarine movies now. Let's make submarine movies.
We need to make as many submarines. I don't care if you put my favorite actors on the goddamn submarine. You're just still stealing it from Hunt from Red October. Okay, fuck off. So, Dave, you ready?
I'm ready.
All right. That's me and you. Take a helicopter and jump into the water and get saved by the scuba guy. We got a diver in the thing that's going to grab you and bring you on board somehow. I don't know how that works, but we're going to
do it. That happened off screen, but it happened.
You didn't freeze to death, but you could have. That's me and you. That if only they had one of those submarines during the sinking of the goddamn Titanic, they could have saved everybody or something. I don't know. Hey, that's me and you. Have to defend every single thing we fucking say to every single person we say it to.
Yeah.
Let's our whole life be nothing but saying, I'm smart and you should listen to me. let's swim. Get it? Swim. Into the world of the Hunt for Red October, Steve. Take it away.
Well, we start out with some on-screen titles explaining where we are and what's going on.
That's right. And it's like, hey, this didn't happen, but maybe it did happen.
Yeah.
But it didn't really happen.
The Soviet and American governments say this didn't happen because it didn't. But let's just say it did for the sake of the movie.
It's more fun if you pretend it did, didn't it? Because it never. And then we cut to a river or something. I don't know where they are.
Somewhere in Russia.
Russia. And
it says near Murmansk, wherever the fuck that is.
Who gives a shit where anything is in Russia?
It's Russia. It's cold.
I've looked
gray.
At my stats. We have no one from Russia that listens to our show. So fuck Russia.
So it's safe to make fun of Russia.
Probably
it's not going to cost us anything.
Because we said something supporting the rights for gay people. They said, nope, no more for you Russia.
No. Banned. Podcast banned forever.
We make Russian version of Late Sitting called You See This? And we watch you. We review everything good come from Russia. Everything bad not from Russia. Right? Great. You watch movie now. Hello, my name is Ivan. Definitely not Jason Harding. And this is my comrade in movies. Say your name, goddammit.
My name Dimitri. Hello.
Hello, how are you? We're going to review Solaris for the 900th. It's near as we can tell. That's the last good movie we produce.
Tarkovsky do good movie, don't he? Good movie.
That's right. Anyway, this time we're sponsored by Putin. You know, go to jail if you like him. Just like him.
Vote for Putin as if you have choice.
Well, there's no election happening, but vote for him anyway.
Vote for him ahead of time.
All right. Enough politics. People in tune with us that listen to our stupid politics.
Yes, that's right. Enough politics. Let's talk about The Hunt for Red October. This totally apolitical movie.
Anyway, so we see a submarine out in the river. And there's a dude on top with another dude, and they're dressed up like Russian officers. And they're like, oh, it's cold. And he's like, yep. And that's it. We start the movie right there.
Imagine how cold it has to be for people in Russia to notice how cold it is.
Yeah, it's got to be fucking
freezing.
That's
fucking cold. It's like when you have
birds falling out of the sky cold.
It's like when you have a friend from Minnesota and they put their coat on before they go outside and you're like, oh, it's fucking cold.
Oh, I'm never leaving the house again.
the person from Minnesota just put his coat on. It must be fucking 25 below zero out there.
Right.
But yeah, so it's cold.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly. It's like watching an Eskimo put a coat on, or an Inuit.
Yeah, like, oh, shit.
Put a coat on right before they go
out. It's cold. Mm-hmm. He put on a coat before he left his house made out of ice.
And then we get the credits, which feature a bunch of maritime stuff. And then this stupid bratty kid comes up to Alec Baldwin, who looks like he's 12. And he says, I want, what does she want? What the fuck does she want?
She's awake, and she says that her teddy bear keeps waking her up.
That's right. So she's a psychopath. And she's like,
yeah.
Daddy, the voices won't stop. You said they'd stop and they haven't.
He says, I'm going to fix your psychotic episode, but I'm going to buy your teddy bear a baby brother. How about that?
Right.
That's a nice setup for the final shot of the movie.
And she's cute. And then we see Gates McFadden fleetingly for like a
second. For like half a second. You'll miss your flight. And she's gone.
Yeah, she's gone. She's gone, and he gets on board an airplane, and the lady, he explains turbulence to a goddamn stewardess.
I bet she knows what turbulence is.
And she's just sitting there tapping her foot going, shut the fuck up, shut the. You're really telling me what turbulence is?
Turbulence? What's that?
And she walks.
She's like, whatever.
Did you know
dude,
there's
trying...
turbulence on airplanes?
Whatever, asshole. I'm trying to help you.
She hasn't been the same since she got shot in the head. She's been a stewardess for 10 years. It's the first thing they teach you in stewardess school is how to go through turbulence. But she just came back here and told me what turbulence was because a passenger brought it up? Because a passenger thinks she's that fucking stupid? Anyway.
So he mansplains turbulence to the flight attendant.
And so he flies to London and he goes to CIA headquarters. And that's where he meets Darth Vader. And Darth Vader comes in and he goes, what you doing? And he's like, I got these things. This is a brand new submarine. Take a look at these pictures. It's got things on them. Can I take
and
this?
I don't know what the things are.
I don't know what the things are, but boy, maybe we should get spooky face about it. I'm going to take it to my friend. And he's like, you have permission to go do that, I guess. Because it turns out Jack Ryan, while he was in the Navy, wasn't he? He was in the Navy.
No, he was a Marine. He was never in the Navy. He was a Marine.
I don't give a shit.
He was in the military. He
was in the military man. Anyway, but he writes
and
books.
Now he works for the CIA. He's an analyst for the CIA.
And he goes, okay, then we cut to the Dallas. The USS Dallas was a submarine. And that's where we meet the guy. What's his name?
The captain's name is Mancuso.
Yes,
but
I
we
know
meet
the captain.
We meet the Seaman Jones.
Seaman Jonesy. And he's like the sonar guy. And he's like, I'm going to show you how great I am. Because I can do stuff. And people are telling stories about him, you know, oh, he did this. He played, you know, he played music in the water, blah, blah, blah. But then they stumble across the Red October, don't they?
Yeah, they. Well, yeah, because he hears something that at first he thinks it's like a whale or something, but
yeah,
he can't quite.
No, no,
yeah,
no.
and
The
it's,
alarm.
it's
The alarms go off because they haven't
Oh,
engaged.
that's right.
They haven't engaged a silent drive yet, and they're like, "Oh, there's a great big boat out there." And so then, they still haven't engaged a silent drive yet. Haven't? Nope, not yet. I don't think. Did they? No, they did. Then they engage the silent guard drive, and they just go
I
invisible.
think, and they're like passing underneath the Dallas or something.
And everyone on board the Dallas is like, "Oh no, it's another ghost ship. I don't think I can take another ghost ship. Oh no, we got where we're supposed to fight ghosts." But then on board the ship, the captain, who's Sean Connery, meets the political officer, right?
Yes, whose
And
name is
they,
Putin?
that's right, his name is Putin. And they have tea, and they have a whole lot of exposition. Like, "It's really too bad your wife is dead, but I guess I'm glad she is because she spoke out against stuff." And he's like,
Yeah.
"That's it, I'm breaking your neck." And he breaks, does something bad to him.
He pushes him and makes him like hit his break his neck on the edge of like a table or something. He
That's
does, yeah, he
right.
fucks him up. He fucks him
And
up
then he
real bad.
watches him die. And
Yeah.
then he throws some tea on the ground while he's burning papers, which are their
And he
orders.
calls
Remember,
the,
they take their
yeah,
orders from.
he they're supposed to do some kind of like battle simulation or whatever, and he burns the orders and he's like, "Well, I don't think we'd be doing that." And then he calls the doctor and he says, "Oh, what a terrible accident. Look, he slipped and fell on
While he's burning
the
paper right there, and the person that comes in is
tea."
like, "Where all this smoke come from?" "Oh,
Smells
yes,
like smoke in here,
well,
Captain.
he set himself on fire and then slipped in tea and then fell down and broke his neck. Don't question me. Don't question what it."
Would you like to swim home?
Meanwhile, Jack has gone to go meet a pederast who's building a submarine.
Yeah,
Actually, they're building a convenient thing that's going to happen later on, which is a rescue sub.
they're building a plot device for later in the
That's
movie.
right. And he's like, "Hey, have you look? Take a look at these holes on these pictures of the Red October. What are those?" And he goes, No. I think what this is a silent caterpillar drive, which will allow the Red October to just get past all of our sonar and everything else. And then it'll be able to launch a nuke, like right outside of New York, and start World War III. It's terrifying.
That's bad.
That's bad. And then he's gone. Thank Christ. And I don't have to avert my eyes anymore. Anyway, so then we come back to the Red October, and the doctor's there, and it's Tim Curry. You know Tim Curry. Did I say Tim Curry during the thing? I should have said Tim Curry.
You
What
might
else
have
is there?
skipped him, but yeah, but Tim Curry's
Whatever.
in
Tim Curry's in it. He's from Clue and a bunch of other stuff. And Tim Curry's
it.
like, "Okay, well, he's dead. We got to go back to port." And the captain's like, "Nope.
We're not doing that.
Here, watch this. I'm taking his missile key." And he's like, "But that means you can launch the missiles by yourself." And he's like, "Yeah, and what's your
Do
point?
something about
Do something. Come on up me. I'm fucking Sean Connery."
it. Make a move. I fucking dare you. Make a
What?
move.
Rocky Horror Picture Show guy is gonna make me scared? Fuck no.
Yeah.
And he turns to one of the cooks and he says, "Watch this." And he takes the key and he says, "Now I have both. Not
was playing
suspicious, not suspicious, not suspicious."
I was playing James Bond while you were dressing up in woman's underwear.
Anyway, then we come back to the Dallas and they're like, "Hey, we found." Oh no, this is before the Dallas has been following them. They haven't engaged the silent drive yet. This is all taking place. And they're like, "Okay, well, we have a new type of submarine, a new type typhoon class." And then Sean Connery comes out and tells all of the Russian guys on board his ship, "Hey, we got a brand new ship, and it's so cool. No one can hear us, and we're gonna be able to launch stuff. And what we're gonna do is we're gonna run missile drills, and then we're gonna go down to Cuba, and they're all gonna be able to fuck a bunch of Cuban girls. Isn't that great?" "Yes, it is. Yay! It's so much fun to be in the Russian goddamn Navy." And that's when they engage the silent drive, and that's when they disappear. And Jonesy goes, "Oh, ghost ship."
Oh no.
Meanwhile, we cut back to the Kremlin, and some dude gets mail, and he drops his tea.
Yeah, it's a not a good it's not a letter he enjoyed reading.
No, he did not. And
No.
so then, while Ryan and the pederast are doing some kind of looking up stuff, he gets a call and he says, "You got to meet the Joint Chiefs because it turns out the Red October, bad things." I'm like, what? He's like,
it's not good, Jack.
Nothing's good. You gotta have to come in and talk to all of them and have a slideshow. And he's like, but I haven't done any preparation. Shut up and just get in there. And there's a whole bunch of really old white men. And they're all sitting around.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, the Red October left. And then the Russian launched all of its fleet. And everyone freaks the fuck out. Because now they think that the captain of the Red October is going to take his submarine and launch all of his missiles at the United States.
Right.
And everyone shits their collective pants. And then Jack Ryan says, no, he's not. I've met him, and he would never do that.
Yeah,
he pink swore me.
I met him once. I know this man's soul.
I know exactly what's going to happen. It's and the also, anniversary of his wife's death. Yeah,
he said it's the anniversary of his wife's death, which means he's probably going to defect.
No.
And everybody else is like, you can't possibly know that. That's just totally a guess. And he's like, no, he's definitely going to defect.
But there's one guy who was like, okay, I'm going to give you a benefit. You can do that. I'll give you a chance. And he's like, okay, we cut to bad submarine guy, which is Stellan Skarsgård. Yeah. And he's like, oh no, we've got to go kill him. I'm like, okay. And then we don't see them for a very long time.
Remember him. He'll come back later.
Then come back to the ship. All the officers are meeting and they're telling the doctor, get the fuck out. We don't like you. Get out, nerd.
Go play with your toys.
Yeah. Why don't you go do something for somebody? I'm sure someone's got gonorrhea on the ship.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out. And they kick him out.
Go piss test somebody.
Because up until this point, nearly an hour, 47 minutes into the film, we don't know what the captain of the Red October is doing. He could be, let's kill everybody. Right.
Right.
Let's launch the missile, start World War III. We're going to kill everybody. But it turns out he and the officers are all going to defect. Yes. Right? And the officers are a little upset because, oh, you killed the political officers. We can always go back and turn ourselves in, blah, blah, blah. And that's when the captain goes, nope, I already told him we're defecting.
Yeah. I wrote a letter to a guy.
I knew you guys were chicken out. So, ha-ha.
So, I knew you'd try to puss out on me, so now you have no choice. What do you think of that?
Fuck all y'all. And so we cut to Ryan's going to an aircraft carrier.
Right? Ryan goes to an aircraft carrier, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because now the Russians come up and said, hey, we got a guy and he's not yet. That's not yet.
Well, first the Russian ambassador says he tells the American political guy that it's a rescue mission, that the sub is the Red October is missing and it's in trouble.
Right.
Right.
I think. I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm mixing up the plot because I think he gets to the aircraft carrier prior to that.
Okay.
And that's when they get the notice. That's when they get that. He gets to the aircraft carrier. The guys in the Navy don't like him. They're like, whatever. And because he's the closest one to, I think, the Dallas. No, he doesn't even know about the Dallas yet.
The Dallas they don't know about yet, yeah.
But now there's a whole bunch of ships out there. That's when the Russian guy comes up and says, we've lost the Red October. Can you help us find it? We go, okay. And then they tell everybody. And they go out there. And then there's some hijinks with them trying to capture the Red, to bomb the Red Octobers. Someone throws a missile at them. Then someone sabotages the Caterpillar drive. And everyone's like, oh, no. And that's when the Russian diplomat goes and he goes, listen, we're missing one. Can you help us find it? They go, sure. And then after all of that hijinks, he comes back and he says, hey, listen, it turns out that the Red October is going to fire all of its missiles at the United States. Can you help us blow it up?
Well, sure, pal.
So then they go, okay, let's tell the aircraft carrier. They tell the aircraft carrier. And no, they don't. They don't. They don't yet. Ryan figures out that this one submarine all by itself is chasing seismic anomalies.
Yeah, yeah. And because he realizes that the thing they're chasing sounds a lot like what the Caterpillar drive does. And he's like, aha, they found the October.
Mm-hmm. So they fly him all the way out there and they drop him in the water. They fly all the way out there. They say, we only have so much gasoline. They find the Dallas. The Dallas surfaces. They get Ryan, who almost dies. And Ryan's like, listen, we're following the Red October. I think he's going to defect. And then they get the telegram, blow it up. Just fucking blow it up. He's gone crazy. Blow up the Russian boat. Will you blow it up the Russian boat? I'm like, okay. And we have a nice scene between Sean Connery and his first officer about what they're going to do, when they get to the United
Yeah, when they
States.
get to the United States, yeah.
And the first officer is like, I am going to go to Montana and I'm going to marry a fat wife and I'm going to do all these things. I have several ideas. I have a cure for cancer. I know what I'm going to do. I can't wait to bring my children over. I'm going to have a happy, full life because I'm definitely living to the end of this fucking movie.
I'm going to live a long, long
I have
time.
a lot to live for, so I mean, but if I got shot, people might feel bad. But I mean, here's the
But
thing.
that's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen because our plan is going to go perfectly, and I'm going to have a happy life living to a ripe old age. Why are you looking at me like that? Meanwhile, Captain Sean Connery is like, I don't know, something about fishing,
I think maybe I like to fish, I guess. I don't
and
know.
I've been at war, and I've been in a Cold War for decades, right?
Yeah.
So now we have the Dallas, which has been behind the Red October, has gotten its orders to fire on the Red October. Red October has no idea it's there,
Right.
right? The Red October keeps doing these things called a Crazy Ivan, where they will suddenly turn starboard or to port to see if there's anything behind them, pinging with their active sonar.
Right.
And, Alec Baldwin's like, I know everything about this captain. He wants to defect. He's not crazy. I met him once. We had a gentle hand job in a shower stall once, and I know him. He's
He's like a
gonna.
second father to me.
You've got to listen to me. You guys understand hand jobs in a shower, right? We're all sailors. We're trapped in this thing.
We're all sailors here.
We're underwater for months at a time. Come on. Jesus. It's going to be
You
years
know what I'm
before they let
saying?
women down here. Anyway, what was I talking about? I keep thinking about hand jobs. Anyway, has he done any crazy Ivans? And the captain's like, "Would no. I'm about to kill him. I'm about to kill this guy. I'm like 3 seconds from killing him." And he's like, and he'd done a crazy Ivan.
And he
And he's
says,
like,
and he says the next time he does a crazy Ivan, he's going to go to starboard because he
that's right.
always goes to starboard at the bottom of the hour.
That's right.
And sure enough, right
He does
when Scott
one.
Glenn is about to give the order to fire, he goes to starboard, and everybody's like,
Okay.
Jack Ryan was right.
That's right. And so when he goes to starboard, he doesn't stop. And in fact, they try to stop too soon, and the ship cavitates, and that alerts the Red October that they're there. And Scott Glenn is like, okay, you unzipped our zipper. Get
Now what?
to sucking. What?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna, never
Metaphorically,
mind, never
you
mind, never. So they go to periscope depth, and he's like sending messages over by the light on the
Morse code, yeah.
Morse code, and he's
Will you be my friend? Yes or no? No,
yes
maybe.
or no, no maybe, stop. We have a guy here who says that you're defecting. Stop. If you are defecting, will you be can you become my best friend? Stop. But it turns out that they verify that the Red October is defecting,
Yes.
right? And because remember, this all depends on Alec Baldwin, on Jack Ryan having the realization that the way you get sailors off of your fucking atomic submarine is by faking that the reactor is going critical.
Right.
So then we cut, and the reactor goes, quote unquote, goes critical, and all the guys, they go to the surface, and they're like, we're gonna all jump off. And they're like, okay, so they're up on the deck. And then an American cruiser comes by and just shoots a couple of things past him, and he turns the doctor, who's a gullible fucking rube
Oh, yeah.
idiot. And he goes, okay, well, the officers and I are gonna go back into the submarine, and we're gonna dive, and we're gonna scuttle the ship. And I'm like, oh, I got such a patriotic vote boner for you. And they're like getting into rubber rafts and they're leaving. And they leave. And the ship shoots a couple of things at them, and then they use one of the submarines, one of those safe the what do you call them, the rescue subs,
Yeah.
and
So they can go from the Dallas over to the Red October. Yeah.
Captain Mancuso and the sonar guy and Alec Baldwin and everybody go over, and they get on board the Red October. And then the Russian guy kills all the American guys and go, ha ha. They sail all the way to New York. And then the ending is a bunch of mushroom clouds.
The plan worked perfectly.
No, they surrender the ship and everyone's shaking hands and, you know, everyone's great. And before they can give each other hand jobs, then the cook shows up and starts pew-pewing everybody.
Yeah, the cook was a saboteur.
That's right, he was a saboteur. And oh no, the guy who had everything to live for is dead.
How unexpected. They killed Sam Neill's character.
Well, he got in the way of the captain. So
yeah.
So now, oh no, but this is, no, what happens first is... Doesn't, you know, one of the Russian subs shoots a missile.
Stellan Skarsgård's sub catches up to him and shoots a missile.
And so then
a torpedo. And the captain orders Ryan to steer
into
the torpedo and to hit it before it has a chance to arm itself. So it just bounces off him.
Yeah. And so after that happens, then the guy shows up and pew-pews everything, and then he kills the first officer, and that's sad. And so then Sean Connery turns to the Burt Mancuso and says, you take command, and I'm going to go downstairs. Why me? I don't know.
Just try to stop. I know. This ain't Star Trek, motherfucker. The captain don't have to do this.
I got to stop the dude because he's gone into the missile compartment. He's going to blow up one of the nukes and kill all of us. And then Burt Mancuso gives him a gun. And he says, good luck, Captain. He says, thanks. He turns a corner and gets immediately shot.
Well, so much for that.
Oh, well.
But luckily, Jack Ryan is there.
Jack Ryan's there, and he's going to go find him. In the meantime, they have a Russian sub that's shooting missiles at them.
Yeah.
Actively shooting missiles at them. One missile's coming to get it, and the Dallas comes between them and leads the missile off. They drop down their safety, you know, their countermeasures, and then they do an actual maneuver, because we actually see it in this fucking movie where this attack submarine just goes, becomes a goddamn elevator and goes,
yeah,
straight
just goes
up.
Right to the top. Yeah.
And it launches up, and the guys who have all been rescued by the American ship, they're eating, you know, they're eating donuts and drinking coffee going, I don't know. I think I'll go back. Russia, do you think we'll ever be free? I don't know. If we win freedom from communism, we'd probably get taken over by oligarch who like force us, you know, to vote for him, and never will I be free. Oh, I think so too. Hey, look, the submarine just shot out of the water like a goddamn cork. They cheer because they say that the captain has scared them out of the water.
Yeah, they think that the captain has defeated the Americans in battle or something. Yeah.
Meanwhile, Ryan finds the cook. Cook's there. He's about to connect two things, which I think was supposed to blow up the entire ship. And he shoots him 5,000 times. In the meantime, they do another maneuver. Mancuso does another maneuver where he turns around. They've got the same goddamn torpedo following them. And he glances right past the enemy sub. And then the torpedo launches onto the enemy sub.
Yeah, they get hit with their own torpedo.
That's right. And they blow up. And everyone on the surface sees the explosion. And again, a real explosion. And they're like, oh, no. We killed him. Darn it. And then we cut to what? What do we cut to? We cut to after they think he's dead.
Yeah, they think that the Red October, they think now everybody, like, they think that the Red October has been destroyed.
It's been destroyed. We cut back to the senator who's meeting with the dude who wants to talk to the president again because they lost another one of their subs. Get it? It's the one that got blown up.
The one that got blown up. He's like, did you guys lose another sub?
Remember, because they needed to go to this place where it was really deep so they would think that the sub would be unrecoverable.
Right. That was the whole point, because otherwise they couldn't get away with having the Russians would demand to have the sub back if they knew that the Americans had it. So,
but this way, they don't think the Americans had it. And they've taken the submarine and they've taken way up a river. Right. Yep. Way up the Potomac. Is it the Potomac? I can't remember.
It's further north than I think it's supposed to be up somewhere in Maine.
Anyway, so Jack Ryan's up there with the captain, and they're like, okay, the end. And that's it. It was like,
pretty much,
America. And they're like, okay. You don't think I'm going to wind up being captured by the CIA as soon as we turn in this ship and they're going to keep me in a hole for information, do you? That would never happen in the United
No,
States of America.
we don't do that sort of thing in
We
America.
don't do that. You don't think they're going to come here and kill everyone that knows about this? No, why would they?
Ah, not a chance.
We're Americans. We don't do anything like that.
We're the
All right.
good guys.
All right. And then we cut to a scene of Jack Ryan flying home with a teddy bear.
Yeah.
Explaining how aircrafts work to the
To
pilot.
the pilot. Yes.
And the movie's over.
End of movie.
Yay! The hunt for Red October. Holy shit, this was better than I remember. See, I mean, I liked it when it first came out. I was, what, 21 when it came out. I liked it then. I haven't really watched it since then. It was a
Yeah.
movie that I bought on VHS when it first came out.
Oh, did you
I
get the
haven't.
red cassette?
Yes, I did. And I
The
didn't.
cassette was red.
I haven't watched it in a really long time. And oh, it's still good. It's like one of those things. It's like, oh, thank God. I wasn't a stupid 21-year-old. This actually was. Steve, how do you feel about the Hunt for Red October?
No, I like it. I think it's good. It's really well made. I mean, technically superb, really great camera work. You get a really strong sense of space in those submarine scenes. Like you
Mm-hmm.
really, it really puts across
Well,
how
the
claustrophobic
production
that is.
designers got to go into the actual subs to get
Yeah.
notes on them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
The
it's yeah.
anything that was declassified, they could
They
take a look
could,
at.
yeah. So yeah, I mean, the production design is great. And it's really well directed. I was really impressed with how good a job it did with not dumbing down the technical jargon and the
Nope.
dialogue,
Nope.
and not like there's the dialogue on board the submarine scenes when the crew is talking to each other and they're doing these really technical underwater maneuvers in the subs. There's a lot of technical language, but they almost never explain anything.
Well, they have one character that's there simply to explain things to. And that is the trainee that's with the sonar guy.
Yeah, but even that, like they explain some of the sonar stuff to him, but like when you get into the bits where they're like, doing stuff to evade the torpedo and, to avoid being detected by the other subs, like
Yeah.
they don't really, there's not a lot of exposition, but you can always follow it.
Yeah.
Like it's always possible to follow what's happening and what's at stake in any given scene. And I thought that was really well done that it does without dumbing it down. They're able to present it in a way that you can watch it and go, okay, I see what they're doing. Even if I don't understand every fucking exact word they said, I understand what's happening. And that's
Yeah.
important. Really good acting, strong performances from everyone. There are so many characters in this movie,
Oh, there's a ton. I
and a
cut
lot of these
down the
characters.
character list. I cut it
Yeah,
down.
oh, there's the cast list is huge. There's so many characters. And a lot of them only have a couple of scenes.
Yeah.
And yet, James Earl Jones and Sam Neill and Scott Glenn and Courtney B. Vance and Tim Curry and all the rest of these actors who are in supporting roles, they're able to create these characters that feel like fleshed out, fully realized characters, even though
Yep.
they don't really have a lot of screen time. Like that moment, not right at the end, but when we're heading into the final act, when Scott Glenn gives Sean Connery his gun,
Yep.
like that feels like a meaningful moment because
Yes, it does.
we know enough about Scott Glenn's character that you realize that, oh, this is actually kind of a big deal for him that he trusts Ramius this much to hand over his sidearm. Like he really is treating this guy as an ally and saying, here, you might need this. Like that's even though we don't, I mean, Scott Glenn is in the movie a lot, but he's not, he has a couple of important scenes, and then it's mostly about Alec Baldwin and
Sure.
Sean Connery, but you feel like you know that character enough that that means something. Alec Baldwin does a good job with Jack Ryan. He gives him a feeling of in over his head uncertainty,
Sure.
which I think is really important because otherwise that character is one of the biggest Mary Sues in the history
Yeah.
of fiction. He's right about everything. All of his guesses turn out to be right. Like and he's good at everything. Like not only is he like super smart, but
What
he's
I
like an action
love
hero and
is he's acting on hunches that are wrong. Because he meets Sean Connery's character, and Sean Connery's character is like, what the fuck are you? You wrote this book about this guy. You are completely wrong.
He criticizes a book that he wrote. He's like, oh, you are full of shit with that one. You have no idea what the hell you were talking about.
He's not 100% on all of his shit, but.
Well, you know. But for stuff that we see him do that moves the plot forward, it's like he's pretty bang on for everything. But like I said, through the performance, he's able to humanize him and make him seem like less of a perfect hero. And Sean Connery does a really good job as Ramius. He gives him this sense of nobility and tragedy. You know, he's doing this because his wife is dead and he's realized that he's wasted his life doing this for 40 years and he didn't get to have a life with his wife. And, you know, and he recognizes the potential destructive power of this submarine. And he's like, I don't want this to be used to start a nuclear war.
Like I'd said, rather they gave him a boat with one purpose.
Yeah. And he's like, and I'm not okay with that. You know, I'd rather give this to the other side than to let this be used for what it was designed for.
Yep.
And the movie has a quality that I noticed at one point, and I thought they did a good job with this. In the early scenes, as we're still getting through the setup and they're developing the situation, and we have a lot of cutting back and forth from location to location, it plays a lot like a docudrama. It plays like you can almost believe that these events really did happen because it's presented in such a realistic, matter-of-fact way. And there's like so much information in the scenes and everybody's talking with a lot of detail and nuance about what's happening. And it creates a sense of reality where it's like, well, it feels like this is really happening. Mm-hmm. And then gradually it transitions into just utterly preposterous.
Oh, sure.
Where like the American captain is the captain of the Russian sub now, and the Russian sub captain is going with the CIA guy to hunt down the saboteur, and there's multiple subs, you know, and it's like it becomes completely preposterous, but it happens so gradually that you don't notice it.
By the time you get to that point, you're along for the ride.
Exactly.
It also helps, and I'm going to break in right here.
Yeah, go for it.
It also helps that boy, oh boy, I miss real things in movies.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, I miss real goddamn things, like actual submarines in the water. Actual submarines doing things in the water.
And
explosions
doing,
in the water. And it's not
and
some
even though
CG bullshit.
And even though the situation is contrived and ridiculous, the actual submarines aren't shown to do anything that is so ridiculous that you can't imagine a real submarine doing it.
Oh, yeah.
In that situation. You know, like it's not like they don't do anything that seems physically impossible for that submarine to do.
Mm-hmm. Like when the Dallas blows all of its, compartments and is going to go straight up. That's an actual maneuver that an actual submarine did that they filmed it doing.
Right.
It wasn't like, well, that'll never happen. That's a maneuver that submarines do.
Subs can do that. They're able to do that. There are times when you might need to get the fuck out of the water real fast. I did think, it doesn't necessarily take away from the movie for me all that much, but I did have kind of a chuckle at times at the contrivances necessary to make sure that Jack Ryan is at the center of the action at all times. Gets a little ridiculous. And also, like, there's really, if you think about it, there's really very little reason for Jack Ryan to be physically present in all of these places other than the fact that he's the main character.
Sure.
You know, we see him get transported from he flies from London to DC, and then he's on the aircraft carrier, and then he's like, I need to be on board the USS Dallas, and they're like, okay, I guess we can fly you there by helicopter, but it's awfully risky. And he's like, we have to do it. And it's like, there's really no reason why you have to do it other than he's the main character and he needs to be there for dramatic purposes. And I had the thought, and this is, you know, sort of going outside the bounds of a review, but I had the thought as I was watching it, I wonder what this movie would have been like if, like, the characters of Jack Ryan and Captain Mancuso had kind of been combined and it was just mostly set on the Dallas and the Red October.
Here's the problem with that. Mancuso would have destroyed the Red October.
Well, but
he received,
you have
he, received yeah. he received orders directly from HQ saying destroy the Red October. Right. He would have done it.
But then it's about then in that version, it's about the captain finding a reason to not do that.
Yeah.
You know, instead of having Jack Ryan sitting on his shoulder going, he's going to defect, like the captain would have to realize that on his own through some way.
You have the character that writes about this stuff, writes about, you know, the Russian guy. He writes books for the CIA about submarines. Makes more sense than how much more would you have to write for the Mancuso character to suddenly think, no, I think this guy's defecting, right? He's going
to
be
I feel like it goes beyond the bounds of a review. It's not really a critic's job to rewrite the movie, but I had the thought as I was watching it. And again, I like the movie, but I had the thought as I was watching it. I wonder if there's a way you could streamline this. And instead of having Jack Ryan be the guy who kind of airdrops in, you know, and be like, here's what you should do. If you could somehow get the captain of the Dallas to that point on his own without having someone else.
It's 130 minutes already. I mean, it's 135 minutes.
Yeah, but there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there is a lot going on.
There's a lot going on.
But you wanted to be...
I want it to be 15 minutes. I've got shit to do. No, I'm not necessarily criticizing the length. I'm just saying...
You just want more Scott Glenn. That's what you want.
Why can't Scott Glenn be the hero? That's what I say every time I see Scott Glenn in anything. But no, one other point I want to make. Tom Clancy, the author, was a Republican. He was a very conservative right-wing guy.
Sure.
He didn't write this movie, but the movie is based on his book. And a lot of his book and a lot of his worldview comes through in it. And to me, this movie is an example of how movies, particularly movies, but any kind of format you want to talk about, can tell stories from a conservative political perspective and still be acceptable and entertaining to those of us in the audience who completely reject that perspective, as long as the point is first and foremost to tell a story and not beat the audience over the head with the message.
It's a story. It's not propaganda. So
yeah, it's not propaganda. You know, if you look for it, the conservative ideology of Tom Clancy is evident throughout the movie, but it doesn't overwhelm the other elements. And that's something that I think most conservative, like, you know, the sort of Ben Shapiro people who have decided, like, we're going to make movies for conservatives. And it's like their movies are all fucking terrible because
they're propaganda,
because they can't help but be propaganda and beat the audience over the head with their politics. And something like The Hunt for Red October, even though there are a lot of conservative elements politically in there, they don't jump out at you so that you have, it's like you can watch the movie as a well-made suspense movie.
It's literally a movie about America being the best.
Yes.
Over Russia. And there's no women in it. Period. Full stop.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Except for like 10 seconds of Dr. Crusher in the first 5 minutes. Not even that. But yeah. So, I mean, I like the movie. It's really well made. It's well acted. It's mostly cold emotionally. Like, it feels more interested in plot complications and political intrigue and technology and tactics than in characters and emotions.
It has man feelings in it. Okay. And what I mean by man feelings.
It has man feelings.
Here's what I mean. The first officer. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You're supposed to feel sad that he got shot. Because what did he say? I very much would like to have seen Montana.
I wish I could have seen Montana or something like that. Yeah.
Ooh, bleh, dead. Okay. Sean Connery is a man who has regrets, mostly about his wife.
His wife.
Right. Yeah. Who was apparently very anti-nuclear. Let's not have a nuclear war, which I guess wasn't terribly popular.
Very, very unpopular.
People apologize to him about his wife, but he doesn't feel that they mean it. Or anything. He's a guy who's haunted by his past.
Yeah.
So there is emotional moments in there, but it's mostly about fear and, you know, regret. You know, the pederast, Jeffrey Jones, has that story about, you know, Me and my daddy built a bomb
The Cuban Missile Crisis. Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I was a kid, sure.
But we're not going to have our people crying all the time about everything all over the place, right? You're gonna, some people upset, but I mean, that's about
I'm not necessarily saying there should have been more crying. I'm just saying, to me, the movie feels, for the most part, it feels more interested in the technical details and the plot details than it does in the characters. There are character moments, and like I said, all the performances are great, and the performances do create characters, you know, through the performance of the actors. But, you know, I like the movie, but I feel somewhat at a distance from it. Okay. Like I admire it more than I love it, but I do like, but I do like it. And I do think it's very well done. And of course I do recommend it.
Well, shut up before you ruin your review. All right. So I like the movie too. And what's great about the movie is that it tears along at a clip. Yes, it does explain a whole lot of stuff. It feels relatively grounded. I like that it's very real, that they only relied on special effects for the underwater, you know, submarine stuff, but anything above the water, it was either something that they made, like the top of the Red October is something that they made, or actual goddamn submarines, that the Navy was involved in this, that they didn't just, on the inside of a submarine, there's lights and switches and stuff. they bothered to make the submarines feel as cramped as they're going to be. They're very cramped. And they stuck to it. They decided, let's make a submarine look like a submarine. And let's have them talk the way submarine people talk. And we're not going to worry too much about the audience getting lost. We'll have some parts in there to explain what's going on. Because, if we didn't, it might get a little complicated. But let's have a thriller adventure movie that's legitimately a thriller adventure movie. What might happen? I don't know. World War III, that might be a thing we bring up. And let's have some really great performances by a whole bunch of really talented people. And let's make it not too long, that it overstays its welcome. And you're just like banging your head going, when is it going to be over? Because it is about submarines. Yes. Submarines,
let me off this submarine.
Cramped and tight. And, all you smell is BO for 6 months at a time. And you're like, get me the fuck out of here. But it's here's the thing. It's fun. It's one of those. It's so watchable. It is such a watchable movie.
Yeah.
There's no long dead parts. There are parts where people are talking, but that usually when they're talking about themselves or how they feel or something along those lines. It's a movie that knows that it's cutting along at a clip and you're telling a suspense story, but we're going to pause here for character. We're going to pause here for character. We're going to talk. We're going to have these two characters talk about Jack Ryan. He's like, did you know that boy? Yeah, I mean, they said he got in a helicopter crash while serving in, I guess, Vietnam. I'm not quite, he looks a little young, but I mean, they're like, they go.
Oh, but the movie takes place in 1984, so.
Yeah, well, that's true. And they're like, okay, cool. And you like it. And I can understand why some people might have thought it happened, because it seems plausible. Seems like something that could happen during the Cold War, where we didn't trust each other and we didn't talk about anything. That maybe one of their guys did want to, come over. I think it's good. I really like the performances. I think it's very well written. And, the script is cut down to tell the story. It's thankfully not a one-to-one translation of the book. And I don't give a shit if the guy is conservative who wrote it. It was still a great story. I don't give a damn. And if they say, that's conservative propaganda. I've seen Forrest Gump. You assholes.
Shut up, boomer.
Nothing's going to top Forrest Gump for secret conservative propaganda. You're not going to rope my fun submarine movie that has my favorite guys in it. Except for the pederast guy.
Except for that one guy. We all know why.
My favorite guy until that came out. But it was it's good. It's still a good movie. It's still very watchable. None of the special effects are like so bad that you're like, oh, this is stupid bullshit. Why can't I have more CGI? Shut the fuck up.
Oh, the special effects hold up incredibly well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's nice to see the military doing something other than blowing things up. It was nice to show up and have their ships in it and have their actual submarines and all that other stuff. It was good. So I liked it. Steve, you liked it?
I liked it. Yes, absolutely.
Classic, Steve.
I'll go classic with it. Yeah.
Okay. Now it's time for you to tell me something you don't like.
Well, this was easy.
Okay.
So as we said, this was the first Jack Ryan movie.
Yep.
And Tom Clancy wrote about a million books about Jack Ryan. Yes, and they have made so many movies and TV shows about Jack Ryan. They did two. They're sort of considered sequels to this, although James Earl Jones is the only person who's in all of them.
Yeah.
Where Harrison Ford plays Jack Ryan, Patriot Games, and sure. Clear and Present Danger. Those are both fine. I think this one is probably better than both of those.
I kind of like Harrison Ford better for this character.
Oh, me too. I think Harrison Ford is better suited to the character than Alec mm-hmm. Baldwin, but I think Hunt for Red October is a better movie than Clear and Present Danger or Patriot Games, but mm-hmm. they're both fine. They're decent political thrillers. They're fine. Sure. But then they got this bright idea in like 2002. They said, let's reboot it. Let's mm-hmm. do a Jack Ryan prequel. And we'll yeah. talk about the younger days of Jack Ryan, even before he was as young as Alec Baldwin was. We'll do like, you know, how did he become a CIA badass guy? So they made a movie that I am not recommending called The Sum of All Fears.
Who's in that, Steve? What second stringer is in that?
Well, he wasn't a second stringer at the time.
You sure?
Or maybe he probably was more of a second stringer at the time than he is now.
He's been a second stringer his entire goddamn career.
You're talking about Mr. Ben Affleck.
That's right.
He plays young Jack Ryan with Morgan Freeman as his mentor character. And apparently they diverge from the novel quite a bit. I never read the novel. I don't give a shit about that. All I give a shit about is it's a long, boring, stupid movie where there's no suspense. And it's a Tom Clancy story. So a million different things happen.
And a nuke goes off.
In Baltimore. And it's like, wait a minute, wasn't Tom Clancy from Baltimore? What's he trying to say? He's like, fuck this place. I don't care. I'm nuking it in the next one.
Also, this isn't his past? How did we not go to war over this?
Wait, I don't remember us. Yeah, wait a minute. But yeah, so it's not a great movie. And of course, that planned reboot of the Jack Ryan series didn't work. Neither did the next one 10 years later when they tried to do basically the same thing with Chris Pine. That didn't work either. And then they finally said, fuck it, let's make an Amazon series starring Jim from The Office. And I've never watched a second of that, but apparently that did okay because they did two or three seasons of that. So whatever. Sum of All Fears, not recommend.
My turn. My not current recommend. Having a stroke, everybody. My not recommend is a sequel to an awful movie that's so bad that Hollywood went, look quick, let's make another one because this one was stupid and stupid people watched it and we want to keep serving slop to the stupid people. And so they made the sequel. Look Who's Talking To.
Oh, man.
And who did they add to the cast? Everybody's favorite, Rosie O'Donnell. You know, the woman that I wish a whale would fall on. She'd be like, nah, nah, and then just out of nowhere, a sign from God. God saying, shut the fuck up. Just anything would happen. I mean, you know the premise of Look Who's Talking To. You have babies, and the babies are voiceovers. And it's what's his name? What's his
Bruce
name?
Willis Bruce is Willis. The main baby.
And Rosie O'Donnell, and you want to pull your ears off your head, and you want to run out of the movie theater screaming because they decided to make a sequel. And this is even the worst one. The worst one coming up is then they said, okay, let's make another one of these stupid fucking movies, except now the pets talk.
Let's squeeze one more out.
This one should have been called Look Who's Talking, Stupid. But it didn't. They didn't call it that.
You saw the first one. You brought this on yourselves.
At this point, they're like, these people are dumb. They'll accept another one. If they had made it, Look Who's Talking For, it would have been furniture. Furniture talking to each other. Don't see it. It's garbage. Don't see it. Hey, Steve, guess what?
What?
It's time for you to make a terrible choice.
I thought so.
And this time around, it's going to be first movies by directors.
Oh boy. Interesting. Okay.
Especially for us because they're all Generation X directors.
Oh boy.
Oh boy, oh boy. So you have to pick between A, B, and C. Steve doesn't know what movie he's selecting. It's A, B, or C. He usually makes a really terrible choice. I don't know why I'm friends with him. He keeps hurting me over and you over and over and over again with his stupid selection. But this time, these are all great movies. I think.
That's right. It's all my fault.
I haven't seen a few of them. I haven't seen any of them for a long time. So, Steve, please pick A, B, or C.
I'm going to go with C. God damn it. It happens every single time.
Never, ever, ever reviewing this. God, these goddamn. Had you picked A, we would have reviewed. Not technically. I mean, technically his directorial review. Quentin Tarantino's Reservoir Dogs. That would have been good.
Would have been.
Had you chosen B, we would have watched and reviewed the directorial debut of someone whose, my opinion of, has changed dramatically over the years. Thought he was really great at first. Now I view him as a hack, a one-trick pony, someone who can't change his style. Did it once, made a great movie, didn't go back to it because he's a slave to his fucking audience, pot, and to his stupid ideas. I am, of course, talking about Kevin Smith and the first movie, Clerks. Is it good? I don't remember. If I watch it now, I might go, Jesus Christ, how did this man get a career from this goddamn movie? But you didn't.
I picked C.
You picked C, and I can't even remember the director's name now. God damn it.
I've made you so angry.
I'm so goddamn disappointed and angry. One second.
This motherfucker.
Okay, that's right. The movie we're going to review is a directorial debut by another guy who I may or may not like. I don't know. I don't know too many of his films that I actually really enjoyed. But the movie we're going to review is Slacker.
First
movie by you know who's it, Richard Linklater.
Richard Linklater, yeah. Yeah.
So if you've never seen it, and I don't blame you if you've never seen it, then please watch Slacker on our next one. And that's it. Thanks guys for tuning in. My name is Jason Harding. You know that. We'll go see a movie this week.
And this is Steve Shives. Give me a ping. One ping only, please.
You told me I didn't have to do that anymore.
I just won. Just one ping.
I don't have any more rubber gloves, and I'm not doing it with my bare hands.
Just one. Come on, man. Just one ping, please.
Stop it. I don't. Come put on, your man. Pants back on. Just no, I'm not ping. Pinging
just,
you.
Just give me one ping, please, man. Okay, please.
Fine, but I'm going to do it hard. You're not going to like it.
Okay, okay, okay.
Okay, here you go. You like that? This might be the worst ending we've ever done for a show.
We didn't tell them what a ping was, though, man. That's our out.
Guess. Their imaginations are going to fill in the awfulness.
That's the beauty of it.
You couldn't have come up with anything. You just wanted me to ping you. Gross.
I also could have said, what was it? You arrogant ass, you've killed us.
How do I do that with a podcast? That doesn't make any sense.
I don't
sense.
Know. That's why I went with the ping thing instead.
No. I guess that one's juicier. More edgy.
If that's what that's what we're all about here at Late Seating. Keeping it edgy.
That ping joke that we turned into sexual assault on me against my co-host.
Ha ha. No, I was asking for it. No, it wasn't sexual assault. I was asking.
That's true.
For it.
You were asking for it.
I was asking for it quite emphatically.
But then I did it really mean and angry, right?
Yeah. But I like was okay with it.
Like in Blue Velvet. You remember that scene? That was awful.
I liked it because I liked the pain.
Son of Dennis Hopper's like, grr, grr, grr. Except I didn't scream mommy. I should have.
Mommy!
God help us when we review that movie. Because we're going to wind up doing the let me see it part of the film. And I'm going to be like, no, I've got to wash my whole body in bleach.
I'm not doing this.
That's how much power you'll have at the end of that. Like, what am I going to use for the end of this review? Blue Velvet.
So many choices. so many options.
Don't be a good neighbor, fucker. What? No, not that scene, please.
Don't make me relive this.
Everything's upsetting. And you start with, he put his disease in me. And I'm like, nope, I'm walking. I'm walking okay. away.
End of show. Away. Thanks for watching, everybody. Walking Thanks away. For listening.
Steve is trying to hurt me on purpose now. He's not. This is bad.
Not doing this. Goodbye.
I have to counter with the, oh, Jeffrey. And they were just like, okay, that's it. Done.
This really is an upsetting movie, isn't it?
Can't wait to make fun of it. I can't wait. One day we're going to make fun of Blue Velvet. We're just going to be monsters at that point. We're just going to be monsters. All right, that's it. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Late Seating is a Let Me Listen podcast production featuring Steve Shives and Jason Harding. Produced by Jason Harding. Theme music, Rollin' at Five, composed and performed by Kevin MacLeod. You can find more Let Me Listen podcast productions at our website at www.letmelistenpodcast.com. You can also find us on Stitcher, iTunes, or just about anywhere you download podcasts. Late Seating is a listener-supported podcast. If you would like to support Late Seating or any of the other Let Me Listen productions for as little as $1 a month, please visit our Patreon page at www.patreon.com/letmelisten. And thanks for listening.